right, welcome back. Rolling along on Monday. Hour number three for you. Mitchell Henderson is with us. Hello, Mitch. Are you there?
Hello, I am here.
How you been? How was your weekend?
Good. I was up in the mountains, so it was snowy, wet, cold, muddy. But what I want to say right now is this is Veterans Day, so I want to give my respect
Absolutely.
To all my brothers-at-arms out there, all the soldiers, airmen, sailors, and Marines that have served this country. You got my respect. This is your day, okay? So
I waited until you came on to go into this, and I echo 100%. Mitch is a veteran. I'm not. But I really believe strongly in the ethics and courage of every man and woman who has served this country. They go in for the best possible motivations, and many of them don't come back. That's quite a compliment to the kind of country this was. It's not now. Maybe we can bring it back. I hope so.
Well, what these people did is you know, everybody gave some, and some gave all. Okay,
so
and this respect goes from the company clerk all the way to the grunt on the front line. Okay, every job in the military is essential. Every job is valuable. Okay, so no elitism here. All right.
Go ahead. I was going to mention something I talked about in the first hour tonight. Trump is beginning to make appointments. And just like in 2016, they're not exciting. There's some retreads already. Stephen Miller brought back, and I'm not saying he's awful. I'm just saying he's a retread. He's second time he's been with Trump. And if you've noticed that this guy, Congressman Waltz, W-A-L-T-Z from Florida, Stephen Miller is Jewish, Waltz is not, but he is already getting endorsements from pro-Israeli Jewish organizations. So you get the picture here. And the new U.N. ambassador apparently has some people thinking she's Jewish. She has a Jewish-sounding name. But the Jews don't like that, and they've called her out. I read a quote earlier from a Jewish woman who has a presence on the Internet, I guess, or at least she's posting on X, and she said this woman is not Jewish, even though she lets people think she is. So anyway, the point is...
Her name is Slavic, I think, Stefanik.
Yeah, people make that error. But okay, here's what we have, though. Too many cooks spoil the soup. Trump is surrounded by people trying to get something out of him, people calling in favors, etc. I can't even imagine the pressure he must be under. And it's going on all the time. One of my guests last week mentioned he had some friends who right then and there were actually at Mar-a-Lago trying to maneuver some kind of influence, not good, they would be the intent anyway, in the Trump administration. And it's nonstop. I'm pretty sure he does what he says he does, and that's he polls people. He asks them, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Then he makes his choice, if he's making the choices in the end at all. And I'm not sure that he always is. I think he's owned and controlled, and I think he always will be. I think it's worse than it was first time around, but we'll see. So the appointments are beginning to come in now, and I'm watching very carefully. I think it does seem that RFK may end up being marginalized, for several reasons that were talked about earlier tonight. I'm just not sure if Tulsi Gabbard is going to get the kind of plum that many of us think she might get. We'll find out soon enough. It's not just Donald Trump running this show. Don't forget that.
Sure. So let me just mention this. There's an outside factor, too. In the first Trump administration, Mitch McConnell stopped everything that Trump wanted to do. So what McConnell has done now is he's calling for a vote on next Wednesday. He wants to install one of his men, as the majority leader in the Senate. Because the majority leader is the one who decides what bills go before the Senate. He can stop anything. Okay, so he's suggesting John Cornyn and John Thune. Okay, Rick Scott
two from Texas, both from Texas.
Yeah,
Rick Scott is Florida.
Listen, these guys, yeah. Well, Thune is from South Dakota, but the thing is, both of those are many Mitch McConnells. They're establishment Republicans. They're rhinos. They might as well be Chuck Schumer and Adam Schiff. Okay. So Rick Scott will actually cooperate with Trump if he gets to be the majority guy. Now, let me tell you something about John Thune. Okay, he sponsored the Israel Anti-Boycott Act, which suggested that if you as an American citizen encouraged or participated in a boycott against Israel for any reason,
you
could face up to 20 years in prison. 20 years in prison. Okay.
Yes.
So this
now,
is who this man is.
How did that guy get elected? Okay, this is not American.
Yeah.
Not American. No. You're allowed to do whatever you want, say whatever you want, think whatever you want. Got it? And
I
looked at this earlier, both Thune and the other guy were labeled as from Texas, and that was a mistake in the story, so I apologize for that. So Thune is South Dakota?
South Dakota, yeah.
How the hell does somebody that wacko get elected? You think South Dakota would do better.
Look at our politics, you know. I mean, I'm not surprised by any of it. They're all lackluster and mediocre people, which gets me into the next thing I want to start tonight talking about American intelligence, the Central Intelligence Agency, okay? And I'm going to give you good, detailed information, non-classified, but good, detailed information. And this is in reference to the fact that Trump wants to make a treaty between Ukraine and Russia, and he's totally out of his depth. He has no idea what Russia will or will not do. He's under the impression that, oh, he's the big tough guy and Russia will just cave. No, it's not that simple. This is life and death for Russia.
Does he actually think that he's going to pull this off, Mitch?
Death.
That's insane.
Yes, yes.
That's crazy talk.
When you listen to Marco Rubio and his people that are going to try to do this, they're putting down a demilitarized zone. Russia will never go for that. They're saying, oh, well, Ukraine can join NATO in 20 years. Why would Russia do it? They're not children. They're not idiots. Okay? They don't think like we do. I mean, our government is used to selling our people cheap candy, you know, and we buy it.
This is
Russia, another country. They're not buying it. So what I want to show, what I want to talk about is how this devolved. Okay? So I want to take a little time and talk about this because I actually have experience with this. Okay?
Let me say one thing, Mitch. Hold on.
Go ahead.
If Trump actually believes that, he is so out of his league in this matter.
Yes.
It's not even funny.
Yes.
This is frightening.
Yes.
The Russians, one of the reasons that the Russians would never accept anything like that, one of the reasons, is that they have lost probably 60,000 young men dead. All right? And several hundred thousand wounded, perhaps. We don't know. But 60,000 is the number that I'm seeing now as the new updated number of Russian dead in this war in Ukraine. If Putin were to pull some stunt and buy into or sign on to something like you just laid out from Trump, the Russian people would probably throw him out. They're just giving up.
Let me tell you, here's another fault in our system, is Trump believes what the Ukrainians tell him. Trump believes that 700,000 Russian soldiers have been killed. He believes that 1,500 Russian soldiers are dying every day on the front. He actually believes this.
Oh.
And this is why he thinks he can pressure. He thinks that Russia would
be willing
to do anything to have peace.
When the truth is,
Russia's on the roll. They're doing wonderful. They're doing wonderful internationally, and they're doing wonderful in Ukraine. They're winning, winning, winning. Okay? It would be insane to stop. In other words, they don't feel any need to stop this war.
No, nor is there.
Okay?
There is none. As the late Russell Bentley told me privately, he said anything less than a complete conquest of virtually all of Ukraine will be viewed as a defeat in Russia after what they've been through.
Yes.
Think about it.
You know, it's too bad that Russell couldn't see Russia's advances now. Like they've taken an immense amount of the Donetsk territory now, whereas before they were up to Donetsk City. Now they've been pushed way back.
Well,
the other thing is to see this.
Russell, we had talked just before, a week before he was murdered. He was going to be back on the program for an update, and I was looking forward to that, and then he's gone. The issue is the part of eastern Ukraine that voted the Donbass to go become part of Russia still is occupied right now in places by Ukrainian troops. They're not out of that whole Donbass area yet. People don't know that. And your point about Donetsk is correct. Mm-hmm. They're right to the west. Yeah. They were right actually at the city limits, practically. And now they're pushed back.
They were. Uh-huh.
I hope that the Russians roll this whole crap show up and throw them all, the whole Zelensky regime in the trash, and liberate that country and give the people the right to vote. What do they want to do? Where do they want to live? I mean, that... For anything less to happen would be a grievous tragedy. For you know who? The families of the million Ukrainian men plus and women who have been killed in this war to date. A million by the Zionist Zelensky. Go ahead.
Okay. So I want to talk about how we got here to this place where we don't know what's going on. Okay. So in 1986... I went to a military intelligence staff officer's course at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. I learned how to collect and analyze intelligence. And one of the things they taught me was really dig in and understand the way the enemy thinks. Look at their worldview, because if you want to predict what they're going to do, you have to understand the way they see the world. And they put a lot of emphasis on this, and I did a lot of work. I took this seriously, Jeff. I have a bachelor's and master's in geography, a bachelor's in history, a bachelor's in political science, a bachelor's in economics, and a bachelor's in international relations. Okay, so the first thing I got to tell you is about that. That started in the 1970s and ended in the 1990s. I spent my life going to college and studying. In the 1970s and early 80s, when I did work, it was very arduous work. The studying was exacting. They wanted you to go to the library and dig up information about the subject, whether it be political science, history, or something like that. They wanted original thinking and stuff. And you had to cross your T's and dot your I's. They were very precise. When you wrote a paper, my thesis, I had to have other professors attack my thesis, and I had to defend it, okay, before it could be published and I get a degree, okay? On a smaller scale, some upper-level courses in the other disciplines required similar things, okay? But here's what I noticed. In the beginning, it was very strict, very hard. By the end, in the 1990s, they didn't want you to go think about anything. They wanted you to regurgitate what they told you. They didn't want you to think for yourself. They wanted you to come up with a paper saying what they told you in their point of view. And that's how you got an A. Tell them what they want to hear. Okay, so this is my own personal experience. Going through college from 1976, I think I started, until my last degree was, I think, in 1996. Okay, so this is years of going to college, so I could see the changes and the differences. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about the CIA. Okay, so one of the things that I want to make clear on here is I have never been an employee of the CIA. Okay, have I worked with the CIA? Yes, I was in intelligence. I did work with the CIA. I have worked with them, okay, but not as an employee. I was an employee of the Department of Defense, okay? So once that's clear. So back in when I came back from Asia in 1974, I went and I spent a lot of time in Central America. I was in Belize, lived in Belize at the time that they got their independence from Great Britain. I was in El Salvador when the Farabundo Martí National Liberation Front started the revolution. I was in Nicaragua when the Sandinista revolution was taking place, okay? So I lived in these places. This was in, started in 1975 when Belize got its independence, and then 76 in Guatemala, 79 in Nicaragua. So I met people, I talked to people, I knew a lot of people. So to get to the point, and this is important to notice the change, to notice the difference. In May 1986, I talked to Duane Claridge. He was the chief of the Latin American division of the CIA. Okay, the chief of Latin American division. I talked to him at CIA headquarters in Langley, in his office, okay? So, and you can look him up, Duane Claridge, okay? He's a known entity, all right? What we were talking about, and this is not a classified conversation, he was talking to me because he knew that I was in all those countries, and he knew that I knew what was going on down there, okay? What's important is not what I knew, it's what he knew. Okay, and a salient thing in this is that he understood that there was four men that came from Palestine in the 1940s and 50s, and two settled in Belize, one settled in El Salvador, and one settled in Nicaragua. Okay, most people would never see a connection between these people. But me and him talked. We started talking about Belize because in the independence movement, there were two Palestinian fathers that produced these men that were Belizean citizens that were taking part in the independence movement. One's name was Said Musa, and he was a socialist politician, and the other one was Assad Shulman, who was a communist politician, and they were in the People's United Party, the party that was shooting for control after independence and stuff, okay? So we talked. So me and him talked about Said Musa and Assad Shulman. Okay, so and these men, Belize is a small country, so I kind of knew quite a bit about them. Okay, they were a presence. I'd probably even talked to them. Okay, so now there's a guy in El Salvador who is in the Farabundo Martí National Liberation Front named Shafiq Handal, and he was the general secretary of the Communist Party of El Salvador. In Nicaragua, there was a man named Moises Hassan, who was a Sandinista National Liberation Front leader at the time. Okay, these men knew each other. These men had family connections. These men had connections that they could use to forward and advance revolutionary objectives and stuff. Okay. So my point here is, if you didn't live in Belize, and you didn't live in El Salvador, you didn't live in Nicaragua, you were probably never heard of these people, okay? I mean, Said Musa and Assad Shulman would be so irrelevant to your life and your world. But when I sat down and talked to Duane Claridge, he knew all about these people. He probably knew what liquor they like to drink, okay? He knew everything about them. He knew their connections. He knew what was going on. His knowledge of what was going on in Latin America was extremely deep. He understood the culture. He understood everything about Latin America, okay? This was the Cold War. Okay, during the Cold War, the intelligence was good. When they hired somebody for the Soviet Union desk, that person did rigorous study on Soviet studies and Russian studies. They knew the culture. They knew the people. They knew the way they thought. They knew all this, Jeff. They were good. These intelligence officers were good. Both the analysts and the people in the field, they knew their stuff, okay? So then Jimmy Carter became president, and we started losing the ability to do good intelligence. They started hiring people because they liked them, or their political thinking was sort of the same as theirs. This started with James Woolsey under Carter. Then we started just having a cascade of mediocre CIA leaders. John Deutsch in 1995, George Tenet in 1996, Porter Goss in 2004, He was Clinton's guy. He was terrible. Michael Hayden in 2006. What these men did is they no longer just like I was talking about the scholarship that you get, the people who got a degree in Russian studies probably didn't really have a deep, rigorous understanding of Russia. Okay, it was
more superficial
now, and more indoctrinated. Okay, so now these people were the analysts. After the Cold War, all these analysts were now sort of mediocre people. And to be honest with you, probably a lot, although they didn't have the term DEI back then, they were DEI hires, okay? So, and this was a political thing. These were political appointments, okay? It got worse. In 2009, Obama appointed Leon Panetta to be the director of the CIA. This is when something brand new started. Instead of them just not even knowing in depth what was going on in these other countries, something different happened. They started wanting the analysts to tell the people above to report to them what they wanted to hear. They started requiring that the intelligence reporting would support the political objectives of the leaders, not just telling them what they want to hear, but telling them what they want to hear to support their political agenda. Okay, now do you understand why our leaders don't know jack shit about the way the Russians think, the way the Chinese think?
Yeah,
nothing like
it.
That.
Sure.
So,
this
is why we can't
do
diplomacy.
We can't do diplomacy, and that kind of incompetence puts every one of our lives at risk. We're really close to nuclear war now. This is not just something that... when I hear Trump prattling on and I see these news releases about how he's going to end the war, I just cringe. I had no idea of the depth of it. You've made that very clear now. But it made me sick. What is wrong with these people? Are they that stupid about world geopolitical machinations? They are. They don't know anything. They're dumb. I think they look at the mainstream media and believe that.
Okay, but let me tell you, okay, to everybody listening, if you want to understand what the CIA would understand back in the Cold War days, back in the 1970s and 80s, when they had really good intelligence, keep in mind that's when I learned and how I learned to do intelligence. In my book, The Final Wars, How to Survive the Coming Civil War in America, World War III, and the Collapse of Civilization, available on Amazon, Chapter 9 is on intelligence for survival. I talk in there about strategic intelligence. I give you the information that the CIA should be giving the president and the secretary of state. You can get that information, the real information that you need to know. Now, why would you want to know it? The reason why you want to know it is because our leaders are in the dark. They don't know what they're doing. And every time they suggest a strategy or they decide to do something into another country, you've got nobody to tell you what the consequences of our actions are going to be. So if you read Chapter 9 of my book and refer to it every time something happens, you know how they think. And you can predict what their response is going to be. Okay, that's why I put this Chapter 9 in there. Survival isn't just about knowing how to get food, water, and stuff like that. Survival is about understanding what's happening and understanding the battlefield, understanding what's going on, understanding what somebody's going to do, being able to predict the best you can and to see it coming, okay? Because like Sun Tzu said, once again, to quote him in The Art of War, if you know yourself and you know the enemy, you can win 1,000 battles. If you don't know the enemy, you're not gonna win. You're not gonna survive very well. And you need as much heads up as you can get you need to know when to run. You need to know when to run. And I put Chapter 9 in there so that you can. In Chapter 2, I talk about why civil wars and why world wars begin. Okay, it's profound. It's not just a rehash of of the cycles of history or something. It gets into the soul of why people go to these wars, okay? If you can understand, I have said all this on the air. It's in past programs, okay? But you should review it, okay? And when we're dealing with Russia, read about Russia. I tell you how Russia thinks. When we deal with China, I tell you how China thinks. Look at it and then decide what you think they're going to do. Are they going to push the button? That's what right. It's all about. So
So the Russians,
I encourage you, this is something that this book has that no other survival book has this. Okay.
No, the depth and breadth of the issues. No, you have produced something that is really unprecedented. This book is utterly unique and has, I don't know what you'd call it, the wisdom of military and geopolitical life in those fields. It's all there in the book. It helps you think. It helps you see us as others see us, and that's another thing that's a gift. We understand how the Chinese think or how the Russians think, and right now the Russians are really, they're close. One screw up, like if we sent a number of missiles and look the other way while Zelensky fired them off into deeper Russia, somebody's going to get nuked. That's where I think we are. I really do. I don't think they're going to nuke Kiev. Kiev's an historic city like St. Petersburg. They don't want to ruin it, but they could certainly take the country. I think they could take the country almost any time they want. But why they haven't done it, I don't know. And frankly, Russell and I used to talk about this. Why haven't they knocked this down and just rolled it up and been done with it? He said, well, that's the way I'd like to see. Remember Shoigu,
Jeff, the
defense minister, Shoigu? He wouldn't push it. You know who wanted to push it? Prigozhin. And that's why he was killed.
Okay, so let me give you an understanding. First of all, there's the first thing of strategy, that your objective is to destroy the enemy's army. It's not to take land, it's not to take prisoners, it's to destroy the enemy's army. They've been doing that. They've been doing that
on
the cheap.
Yeah.
That's reason number one. Reason number two is they have bled the economies of NATO and the United States and Canada dry.
Oh, and we're almost disarmed,
so
Mitch, in many key areas.
Debt.
Disarmament. We've been disarmed. Yes.
We don't have we don't have a growth rate. We don't have industry. I mean, he's winning the sanctions war. The sanctions war is killing America and
it's
killing
true.
Europe. Okay?
Absolutely,
it's killing us. So he's you know, Sun Tzu also said, and listen, Putin is a student of Sun Tzu. He also says, if you can win the war without fighting the battle, that's the best victory you can have. Okay. So Putin's strategy is well grounded. He's patient. Okay. And he's not losing. They're not losing. They're not hurting. Okay. So this is what's going on.
60,000 dead is not an easy thing to swallow for any country. That they only have 140 million people. We have 325.
Oh no, that's exactly why he's trying to fight this war of attrition to destroy the Ukrainian army. Because see, they can move now. They can move faster and better because the Ukrainian army is weak. It's lost its morale. It's just not. Degrading, but the thing is Ukrainians are probably up to 800,000 dead by now. Okay, and millions.
I think it's
wounded.
Over a million, but whatever.
Yes,
it's huge.
Probably.
Huge.
I always try to be kind of conservative and stuff.
Yeah,
now Russia
that's fine.
Reported it only had 20,000 or 30,000 deaths, but honestly, and just thinking militarily, I think they've probably had about 70,000 deaths. Now on the Russian side.
I would agree with
that. That would be my estimate. So
well, remember anyways, the story about Prigozhin, though, Mitch, is really an important one. He and I used to talk to Russell about Prigozhin. He said Prigozhin's military, the Wagner group, was the best fighting force in the world at that time when Prigozhin was leading it.
Yep.
And he wasn't kidding. Now, Prigozhin hated the bureaucracy and Shoigu apparently, and wanted to win the war. But they wouldn't give them enough material, enough armaments, weaponry, and the rest of it. And they had to do it on their own. At one time, there were something like 60 or 70 Wagner recruiting offices open all around Russia, and people were signing up to join Wagner, not the Russian military, the Wagner group.
Yep.
Go ahead. Anyway, they killed Prigozhin because he wanted to win the war. He wanted to stop playing games.
So once again, I just want everybody to keep in mind, now this may just sound like an insignificant story, this conversation that I had with Duane Clarge in May 1986, okay, that he knew, without prompting or prior research, he knew off the top of his head who these four Palestinian-connected guys were, Saeed Musa, Assad Shoman, Shafiq Handal, and Moises Hassan. He knew who they were. He knew what they were up to. Uh-huh. Now, you know, I knew who they were up to, but that's because I lived there, and I heard about it all the time. How did he know? I'm trying to tell you that there is nobody in the CIA today who's ever heard of these four men. These four men are still alive, Jeff. These four guys are still alive. Mm-hmm. They're still involved in politics in Central America, and I bet you there's not a single person in the CIA who's ever even heard of them, okay? So,
I wouldn't be surprised.
You know, this is it. So, in view of that, let me tell you what the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom and the Prime Minister, the President of France, Macron, are pushing Biden to allow the Ukrainians to strike deep with U.S. missiles and British and French missiles deep into Russia. They want to do this. Before, this is what they say, they want to take this action before Trump becomes president so that Trump will not have a chance to make peace.
Well, Biden is going to meet with him Wednesday, and the word I have from the articles I've seen is that he's going to lean on Trump to try to make sure that the money and weapons flow to Ukraine continue and are not interrupted. That's what Biden is allegedly going to try and push for in the meeting Wednesday with Trump.
Sure, sure, it is. So look after Wednesday. If that doesn't work, is Biden going to give the go-ahead? This means thermonuclear war. If he gives the go-ahead, this means we're involved in a war against Russia, directly in a war against Russia.
Now listen to what Russia...
They're so frantic about what they're doing.
Listen about this. This is very serious, and Mitchell is 100% correct. Let's say Biden has a bad brain day. I mean, they're all bad for him. He says he wants to get even. Whatever. They threw him out of his own party. They took the nomination away from him, etc. He wants to get even. What'll he do? He'll give Zelensky the green light. Go ahead. Use our missiles. Fire away. Whatever. And that could end everything right then and there. And I'm serious. Biden seems potentially capable of doing something like that. I guess he is capable
and
of doing exactly that.
What Macron and Starmer wants to do is they want to create a situation where it's out of Trump's hands, where the war is going to escalate, and therefore Trump can't do anything about it except respond. Anyways, if it goes nuclear, Trump's not even going to have a chance to be inaugurated, okay? Because
we're two and a half months away, Mitchell. Two and a half months.
Yeah, this is the strategy of nuclear war. We got professors over here who think they know how to strategize this and stuff. We've never known, okay? But here's what it is, okay? If you launch one nuclear weapon, you must launch them all. If you want to win, if you try to do a demonstration attack, you're going to kill all your people. Okay? You can't afford to do that. If you launch a nuclear weapon, you have to launch a total attack at one time. So that means America, Canada, and Europe have to be taken out right away. Okay? And if places like Poland and Germany well, not, Poland and Germany, who have no nuclear weapons on their soil, if they think that they're not going to get hit for that reason, they're sorely mistaken. That's not how it works. Russia's not going to absorb a counterstrike and have a fully functional Finland army, Polish army on their border. Now, the German army is no consequence. They're a bunch of sissies, okay? So they're not worried about the German army. But the Polish army and the Finnish army are sizable and fairly well trained, okay? And they're not going to leave them intact when they are going to suffer. If they're going to suffer a strike themselves, why on earth would they leave these countries intact? Okay? I mean, you know, listen, right. I'm talking right now about the principles of war. I'm talking about how you fight, okay? We have a sore deficit in this world of people who have ever been in a fight. I know grown men that have never been in a fight in their life. I cannot imagine such a thing. I've been in so many fights, it's not funny, okay? So people who have never been in a fight, some college professor who's never been in a fight, thinks that they can divine what the strategy of Russia is going to be in a nuclear war. This is so absurd. These people don't know anything. They haven't even been in a fight themselves. They don't know what an actual human being will do.
Complete morons. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, yes. So the people that we listen to, you know. And talking about Trump's appointments, look at who he made Secretary of State, Marco Rubio. He's a war hawk.
Wait a minute. What did you just say about Secretary of State?
Marco Rubio has been appointed Secretary of State.
When did this happen?
Just not long before the show came on.
I missed it. I'm not looking and scanning. I'm doing this. All right. Well, yeah. I got to get on that.
He is a war hawk.
I knew there was some. I knew the fix was in for Rubio. Oh, man, this is bad. This is really bad. See? Same old stuff.
Rubio likes to interfere in the affairs of other countries. He supports genocide in Gaza. Okay?
Bubble boy.
The good guy that they should have put in there would have been Bill Hagerty. Bill Hagerty is against war. He's certainly against war in Ukraine. Bill Hagerty is against giving Ukraine a dime. Trust me, Marco Rubio, whatever he says, he's going to insist that we keep giving money to Ukraine. Okay? We're going to, with all the suffering we're doing here at home, these people are still going to ship guns and money to Ukraine.
Oh, there it is.
Trump is. This will be the first promise that Trump is going to break. He's going to end up being slippered into continuing support for Ukraine at least some level. Okay, it's going to drag on, and it's going to cost us a fortune that we could use to solve some problems here at home in America with American citizens. Ukraine is completely unimportant to the United States. It is not of any vital interest whatsoever. It's not even a threat to Europe. Everything they say about this is a lie. It's so that they can have world power. It's got nothing to do with the welfare or national interests of America.
Right.
It's the personal interests of those in power. It's got nothing to do with you and me, Jeff. It doesn't benefit us in any way.
No,
Russia
no.
is not a threat to us. Okay? This is how it is. So,
Trump expected to name Senator Marco Rubio as Secretary of State. When you could have put somebody like Tulsi Gabbard in there. World connections.
Tulsi Gabbard would have been great Secretary of State. Tulsi Gabbard would be a great Secretary of Defense. They're going to put some mediocre, lackluster person
in
the
Secretary
of Defense.
Somebody
who is a buddy of the military-industrial complex. Somebody who is best friends and buddies are rich industrial people and That's who's going to be Secretary of Defense.
MIC is military-industrial complex. You are so right. Nothing much is going to change. The direction may change 5, 10, 15 degrees, but it's still headed toward war. Doesn't matter. This is bad.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I'll put this up too. Yeah, no, we could have had, if you put RFK and Health and Human Services, Tulsi Gabbard, Secretary of State, or Defense, either one, I wouldn't care. We know these people don't act thoroughly and completely independently. They all get their marching orders somewhere along the line. No, this is, it's, Trump is already turning into a clear disappointment already. Marco Rubio, wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Marco Rubio. It's like, it could always be worse, but it's bad enough. So in the time remaining, let me cover principles of war. Let me cover at least one principle, and that's the principle of security. Okay? Never let the enemy have the advantage. Don't get caught by surprise in the wrong place or time. You must choose the time and place of battle, not your enemy. I learned this the hard way. I was in a bar in Belize City in 1975 called Johnny's Bar. I recommend not going there. It is on the south side of town, and it's the hangout of all the guys who will rob you in the rest of the city. A thief had grabbed a wallet out of a Canadian woman's purse in the bar. Her Canadian boyfriend was too intimidated to say anything. I was already wasted and was not intimidated. I told the guy to give the lady her money back. The thief got defensive and asked, "Are you calling me a thief?" I replied, "No, I'm just telling you to give her money back." He stormed out. Then he came back and challenged me to step outside to settle it. He walked out ahead of me. When I cleared the door, a guy smacked me across the face with a 2x4. I actually saw stars and Tweety Birds, for real, okay? He ran. I had allowed him to pick the time and place of the fight. Yeah. Never allow your opponent to do this. It took me months to find him and get even. After that, whenever someone challenged me to step out of their bar to fight, I blitzed to attack them right then and there without even a word. Obviously, my opponent was not comfortable with that place at that time. So that is where and when I attacked. It also gave me the element of surprise since he envisioned more talk and movement. This is a good rule for life. When you are walking down the street and someone pops out of an alley with a gun and directs you to go into the alley, never comply. The guy is uncomfortable doing the crime where you are, so never go where he is comfortable doing the crime. Run and scream. Also, be aware of ruses, like them directing you to a dark place so you can score some drugs, or a hooker luring you to a secluded place so they can rip you off. I know because I was a vice cop, and it was my job to go with them. I was armed and more dangerous than they were. A prostitution bust or narcotics buy bust was nice, but arresting them for strong-armed robbery was even better. They would usually get hurt. Security is about being aware of what is going on around you, situational awareness. When I went with the hooker into the dark alley, her and her pimp visualized that I was a sucker. And they were going to cut me and beat the crap out of me. I visualized it differently because I knew what they were going to do, but they did not know that I knew, and they did not know what I was going to do. I had the element of surprise. Let me describe situational awareness to you. As I walked down the streets in these bad neighborhoods, I looked at everyone on the street. Are they walking towards me? Are they paying attention to me? What weapons at hand are available? Are there sharp corners that I can bash their face into? What about a stop sign? If I smash their face into a pole that it is on, that will draw blood. What kind of fencing is there? Chain link fence? Rubbing someone's face along the top of a chain link fence will fuck it up. Are there rocks or stones laying around that I can pick up and smash them in the face? What is my thing about attacking their face? Their face has their eyes. Their target acquisition system. I'm going to need to take that out so they cannot hit me. If their eyes are messed up or blood is flowing over them, you'd have the advantage of fighting with a blind man.
You bet.
I watch the traffic on the street. There may be an opportunity. If he jumps me when one is approaching, I can push him in front of it. This was street survival. My goal was to be the one going home that night. Security in a group is similar. You place guards out so that no enemy can sneak up on you and catch you unaware. You can put rocks in a can and tie it to a tripwire that you set out so it will make noise and alert you that someone is coming. Do a terrain study and find good observation points so you can get plenty of early warning that someone is headed your way. Put fighters at these observation points because they are extending your security further out. If you have lots of people, patrol even further out so you can find them before they find you. If it is better to engage them far from your group if you can. The idea is to not be surprised. The idea is to have the fight away from your women and children so they do not get hurt. That is security. Even street criminals do this. A pusher will have watchouts that look for police coming into the area. They often layer this so that they have both your guards on the same block and guards on other blocks that can pass a warning along. In my day, they would yell rollers, which is street slang for cops. Even in jail and prison, they designate men to keep an eye out for guards coming. They use the term aguas. This comes from an old Latin America when people would empty their chamber pots into the street in the morning by yelling aguas, which means water, to give the pedestrians below a heads up. Aguas means waters. In jail or prison, it means guards. So they do it. The bad people do this. Layer your security with camp guards, observation posts, and reconnaissance patrols. In a group while on the march, you should have a point guard who has a good feel and hunting skills. Someone who can detect subtle changes in the path ahead to recognize that someone has been there or is there now. This just as aside, during Vietnam, the guys who came from the farms and stuff, they were the better guys to put on point because they could notice these differences. They were used to it. City people wouldn't notice things. So take that into account. You should have flank guards that move to your right and left to spot ambushes or signs of human presence. You do not want to be surprised. A rear guard protects you from being surprised from the rear. These guards are all tripwires that alert you that someone is approaching your group. They are like static camp guards, except they are moving with the group. I remember with the infantry in Panama, we developed our own tactics in this regard. We would have a rear guard that trailed quite a ways back from the main body in case enemy troops started tracking and trailing them on the move. This far rear guard would hopefully bump into them before they made contact with the main body. This cannot just be one guy for obvious reasons. They need some firepower. This is counter-tracking technique. Counter-tracking is security, okay? So, I just want to mention something else here. Your point guard's going to probably have a shotgun, okay, either automatic or pump action. And keep in mind that if there's a problem with drones, your point guard can also be an air guard because if a drone starts coming over, they can just shoot it out. The Russians right now in Ukraine are shooting down drones with shotguns. So it's one
pretty
of many methods.
Yeah.
So, right. You know.
Wow.
And next week we'll continue with more principles of war. Okay?
Yeah. Let's go to... How's the book... Look, in these times, you know, very few people are reading anymore. This is not just an entertainment reading book, though. This is a manual for survival. There's nothing in here that's less than incredibly important for you to have knowledge of. That's the truth. All right, hold on. I'm going to go to see how Amazon's treating you. PCH. Are people buying the book? Are you selling any? And don't be afraid to say yes
sure.
or no, because you should be.
I think I've sold about 150 of them.
Good, okay.
Yeah, 150.
All right, good,
books.
good. Just go to Amazon, put in Mitchell Henderson Books. That's one way to do it, and you'll see The Final Wars right there. He's very cleverly come up with a a cover design. It looks like a military manual. That was very clever. I like that. How to Survive the Coming Civil War in America, World War III, and the Collapse of Civilization. And I have never, in all the years of doing this programming, seen anything better in a book in terms of a guide to help you survive. That's the truth. Mitchell, thank you again for everything. We'll talk to you next week. And
you are welcome.
I'm not happy with what I'm seeing with Trump, so we'll track it. All right.
Okay.
Good night. All right, Mitchell Henderson. Monday, off and running. Thanks for being here. Yep, Marco Rubio going to be Secretary of State with all of that international experience he has. Please. This is incredible. All right, back with you tomorrow night. Let's keep watching and try and grab a laugh here and there. Maybe you can. I'm trying. Talk tomorrow night.